In the Middle Ages, it took weeks, months of perilous journeying for those few Jews who braved it to get to the land of Israel. On Monday, I got on a plane in Chicago, had a stop at Newark, landed in Tel Aviv Tuesday morning, and came back Wednesday night. Now, before you offer me your sympathy, I'll tell you that the story goes that Reb Nachman of Bratslav left Uman, sailed all the way to Israel, stepped off the boat in Yafo, got back on the boat, and went back home. He just needed to experience stepping in the land. I stepped in the land, I ate in the land, I even slept a little in the land, although it's strange hours. But I was there for Yom HaAtzmaut and for the end of Yom HaZikaron, and part of the impression that I got, before I tell you specifically why I was there, was how small and intimate and communal a land it is. Something that is alien to someone who only knows America. As we were flying out of Newark, the crew announces, because Yom HaZikaron is beginning in the land of Israel, we are showing no videos on this flight. And I have to tell you, my heart lifted at that announcement. It was an example of how the filaments of Jewish pride touch every part of the state. And memory is sacred even above 10,000 feet. And then I went there because a member of our own community, Eunice Nazarian, had the great zechut, the great honor, to be lighting one of the 12 candles for Independence Day, an honor very rarely given to somebody who lives most of their life outside the land, although the Nazarian families, as you know, are intimately involved with Israel. And so each of the 12 candles, which symbolize the 12 tribes, which, of course, is another tribute to the interconnection of history and memory and a contemporary state. It's remarkable to have 12 candles for 12 tribes, which pays tribute to something that happened 2,500 years ago, and yet, of course, there are flashing lights and technology and videos. Each of them reads a small statement in Hebrew about where he or she came from, and there was an actress from Belarus, and, of course, the Nazarian family from Iran, and there was someone else who'd come from Eastern Europe, and there was somebody who grew up on a kibbutz, a panoply of Israel's very diverse community. And then they each light a candle. It's a very moving and beautiful ceremony. As I'm leaving the next day, you know, each time you go in and out of Israel, the security officer has to ask you some sort of question to validate your story. So what were you doing here, she says to me. So I explained that I knew someone who had lit a candle in Independence Day. She goes, oh yeah, who? So I told her, and she said, and how do you know him? So I explained, and she said, yeah, I saw it was beautiful, wasn't it? And I thought, we really are, as Jews, all in a small boat. And it was a beautiful thing. And it reminded me not only of the contemporary story of Israel, but the way in which the story of Israel gets tied to the memory of Israel. And I thought that this morning I would illustrate that by talking to you about why Yom HaAtzmaut is a holiday. It's very hard to get a holiday on the Jewish calendar. You got to get it past a lot of rabbis. And rabbis tend not to like adding holidays to holidays that have Torah or Talmudic validation. And so when Yom HaAtzmaut was first proposed, there was a big argument. Should you fold it into Lag BaOmer, for example, which is already a holiday? Because we like to add holidays to holidays that are already there. Zach. And I read a beautiful lecture recently by Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, the son of the great Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who's the son-in-law of Rav Yosef Soloveitchik, a very distinguished rabbinic lineage, and he talked about the way in which Yom HaAtzmaut fits into the Jewish ethos in the following way. He said, really, if you want to think about Yom HaAtzmaut as a Jewish holiday, you think about it not as equivalent to Pesach, but as equivalent to Hanukkah and Purim. And he makes a point that is so relevant to modern Israel and also so beautifully integrated to the history of Israel that I thought on this morning, fresh off the boat, so to speak, I would share it with you. When the Jews came to Sinai, when they were liberated from Egypt, it was God's initiative. Without the plagues, gentlemen, you're sitting in the front row, you got to be quiet. Had you sat in the back, you could have talked, but you're right in front of me. When God liberated, sorry for that commercial interruption, when God liberated the Jews from Egypt, it was God's initiative. Plagues and splitting seas. And then they come to Sinai and God calls Moses up the mountain and gives him the tablets. But that's not true for Purim and Hanukkah. When Hanukkah came along, the Jews could have chosen not to fight. When Purim came along, Mordechai and Esther could have chosen to be quiet. There, the covenant was kept because of the initiative, not of God, but of the Jewish people. So Rabbi Lichtenstein says, look, who could blame the survivors of the Holocaust if after the terrible torture, the pain, the suffering, and the death, they said, you know what, we're done. We're done. We will now scatter ourselves among the nations of the earth and be quiet and live. Who could blame them? And some did, as you know. Every few weeks I get a story about a child or a grandchild who discovers that their parent or their grandparent was Jewish and went through the Shoah, went through the Holocaust, and decided they would never let their children know about their identity. And who can blame them? We can be sad that it happened, but none of us who didn't go through it has the right to say, you shouldn't have done that. And yet, as we know, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of survivors came to Israel and chose to fight. They didn't come to Israel because they knew they were going to just have Shalva, they were just going to have peace and calm and cultivate their orchards. They were coming, they knew, to fight. And despite everything they had gone through, they made the choice of Purim and Hanukkah. That is, even though we have suffered, we're not giving up on the covenant. We are going to create something new, and that's why Yom HaAtzmaut is a holiday. Because it's the holiday of the Jewish people choosing in the face of difficulty, of odds, of suffering, of history, to say, we're not done. And we will not disappear. That's why you have this powerful and painful juxtaposition in Israel of Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzmaut. It's a strange thing when you live through it. There is this giant public mourning. And the mourning is not theoretical. There are the parents who've lost children in the war. There are the brothers and sisters who've lost siblings. There are the children who've lost parents. They're there at the cemeteries, lighting candles, saying prayers, weeping, remembering, going through the most searing imaginable pain, which is knowing that you have lost the people you love because of other people's hatred. And then all of a sudden, it's Yom HaAtzmaut and everybody has to be happy. And you think to yourself, it's inhumane. How can we do that to these people? How can we ask them to mourn and then all of a sudden to have Yom HaAtzmaut, and you realize that that is exactly what Jewish history has asked of us again and again and again. That you emerge from the pain, from the slavery, from the suffering, and you reconsecrate and renew and sanctify the life that you've been given. Matchil b'genut u'misayim b'shevach, we learn on Passover. You begin with the bad stuff, but you end with Yom HaAtzmaut. As difficult as it is, as painful as it is, and in fact, we learned that this morning. We have a double portion this morning. What is it? Acharei mot kedoshim. After death, that's what acharei mot means. After death, kedoshim, there is holiness. Life doesn't stop with death. That's the message of Yom HaAtzmaut. It was extraordinary. If you sat in a hotel room in Israel and you turned on any of the Israeli stations, you saw a memorial candle, and that was on all day long. That was it. You remember the days when television used to go off? You know, when you would get snow on the TV at night, right? Which doesn't happen anymore. But that's what it was like. That's all you were going to get. And when that memorial candle stopped on the television, what you saw were the candles of Yom HaAtzmaut. It was and is extraordinary to think that this tiny country, so tiny that the plane stopped showing videos, that the security guard at the border knows the person that you just spent time with, has the koach, has the strength, emotional, religious, spiritual, military, physical, historical, to mourn and to laugh, to weep and to celebrate, to remember, which is Yom HaZikaron, and to be free, which is the meaning of Yom HaAtzmaut. When Rabbi Shlomo Gorin, who was the chief rabbi of Israel, gave his first address on the first Yom HaAtzmaut, the text that he chose to begin with was from Ezekiel. It's the text that we use at every Brit Milah, B'damayich Chayi, which means with blood shall you live. And he said, you know, what is so powerful about this text is for a long time the Jewish people just had the blood part. They just suffered. They just had pain. And now with the coming of the state of Israel, even though we fight wars, it's bidamaya chayi. You fight wars so that you can live. No longer is there just blood. Now there's life. Yom HaZikaron, boy, that's an old Jewish holiday. Maybe we didn't call it that. But how many days are there on the Jewish calendar that are equivalent to Yom HaZikaron, where we mourn for those who are fallen, but there's only one Yom HaAtzmaut? There is no holiday even for the ancient founding of this state. Not really. Only in our day is there a Yom HaAtzmaut. Only in our day have we really realized the vision of the prophet Jeremiah, who said, stop your eyes from weeping. Stop your voice from crying. Yesh tikva l'achritech. There is hope, Ne'um Adonai, v'shavu banim ligvulam, that your children will return to the land. And it took a couple thousand years. But when you are there, almost at any time, but especially for Yom HaAtzmaut, you feel that miracle and you recognize what it means. This year at Yom HaAtzmaut, what we celebrated was the 100th anniversary of the founding of Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv is thus the oldest Hebrew-speaking city. quite a remarkable thing. God knows when the last Hebrew-speaking city passed from the earth. A couple thousand years ago, but when exactly, we don't know. But today, there is Tel Aviv. Today, there is Israel. This year, there was the 61st Yom HaAtzmaut. And when you saw the candle lit by a Jew from Iran, and a Jew from the former Soviet Union, and a Jew from a kibbutz just a few miles away, you realize that the vision of the prophet really has come true. That you will be gathered from all the corners of the earth. And all we wait for is for the second half of the prophecy. And there will be none to make you afraid. That has not yet come to pass. But so long, I must tell you, as we have the children who danced, the soldiers who marched, the thousands who wept and who laughed, you can be sure that it will come to pass. Because there is no way of understanding the depth and the truth of that simple song, Am Yisrael Chai, like going to the land of Israel and seeing it before you and knowing that through a combination of superhuman effort and God's blessing, we are the fortunate generation that has once again seen Hakamat Medinat Yisrael, the rise of the state of Israel. And now I would like to ask you to rise for the prayer for the state of Israel. On page 149, Avinu Shebashamayim, our prayer for the state of Israel.
Deliver them and crown their efforts with strong Bless our land with peace, O God, and its inhabitants with lasting joy. And let us say, let us say, Amen. Amen. Shabashamayim Tzu Yisrael V'Goalo Barech Et Medinat Yisrael Reshit Tzmichot Geulatenu Hagen Aleho Bi'evrot, Bi'evrot Chostecha Ufros Aleho Aleho Sukkot, Sukkot Shalomecho Venom